I want to start with a question that I suspect more leaders carry than they're willing to admit publicly. You've built something you have for maybe decades into developing your craft, your leadership capacity, your professional credibility. By the measures that most people around you would apply, you're succeeding, the organization is functioning, and the results are real, and your reputation is solid, but something internally feels off. Not necessarily broken enough to stop, not wrong enough to address in any meeting or conversation, just off. There's a quiet gap between the life you're living and the life you sense you were made for, between the leader you present in public and the person you know yourself to be in private, between the outcomes you're producing and the ones that would naturally mean something to you when you look back from the far end of your life. If you know that gap, if you've ever felt the particular exhaustion of someone who is working very hard on the wrong things, then this series is for you. Because most of the solutions we reach for when we feel the gap are external. We need a new strategy or a new system, maybe a new discipline. We read another book, go to another conference, start looking at another framework. And those things are not without value, but the foundation underneath them isn't right. If the person applying them has the strategy and they've not done the interior work that makes that strategy sustainable, the results at best will be temporary and at worst, disappointing. True transformation does not begin on the outside, it begins on the inside. And that's where we're starting today. And it's all right here, right now, and only on the Five Gifts Podcast. You're listening to the Five Gifts Podcast, a weekly show designed to equip leaders in the Spirit-filled church. I'm Bruce Ritter, and along with my co-host Charles Russell, we offer insights for leading the local church in the fullest expression of Jesus. If you're interested in learning more about practical theology, the gifts of the Spirit, and spiritual disciplines, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast.
Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast. My name's Charles Russell. And I'm here with Bruce Ritter, and this is episode 21 with the very first of a series dedicated to one of the most important and most neglected dimensions of leadership development. We're talking about the interior life of the leader.
Hey, everyone. It's great to be with you again, starting a brand new podcast series. Charles, it's been a great weekend for me. Got my daughter moved home. She's been teaching in another state, and she's just about 7 weeks from getting married. So things are in upheaval in our house, but this is a great sanctuary for me. It's a great inner sanctum just to come and talk to our listeners about some issues related to leadership. How things going with you?
Well, it sounds like it's exciting times in the Ritter household. And so, man, congratulations on all that. We're the Russells. We're doing good. We just came off of a little excursion to Hilton Head Island in South Carolina. My youngest daughter is she's graduated a year early from high school and headed to college in the fall, and so she wanted to take a trip if she could instead of doing a big party and those kind of things. So anyway, the Lord just orchestrated some events, and we were able to spend a few days at the beach and celebrate her. So we had a great time there. But again, it's always great to be back in the saddle here on the Five Gifts Podcast, and grateful for all of our listeners and viewers that are joining us today. Today, as kind of, I don't know how good of a segue that was, but nevertheless, we're segueing into the content and the episode topic for today. So, you know, we spend a great deal of time in leadership culture talking about systems, talking about strategy, team dynamics, organizational health, ministry execution, and all of that matters. It's all important, obviously, but if you've been tracking with us, you understand we value those things. You know that we take those conversations seriously. But underneath every system, under every strategy, under every team dynamic, there's a person. And the quality of that person's interior life, you know, their character, self-awareness, their capacity to to choose rather than react, their integrity between what they believe in and then how they actually live. All of those things determine what every other tool and framework can ultimately produce. And so we wanted to take a few weeks to kind of explore and think about, talk through some of those issues. And so this series is called Internal Foundations. And the premise is very simple. It's simply this. You cannot build lasting external results on an unstable internal foundation. If the inside's not right, the outside is going to eventually reflect that, regardless of how sophisticated your systems are or even how compelling your vision is. We've got to get the internal right before the external can be sustained.
Charles, I couldn't agree more. And so in this first episode, we're covering an inside-outside approach and what it means and why it really is the only approach that produces lasting change. And we'll look at what stands in the way of most leaders genuinely engaging it. And we're going to talk about the deep problems that surface repeatedly in the lives of high-performing leaders, the difference between character-based and personality-based approaches to success, the power of the paradigms we carry and how they shape everything that we see, the foundational freedom to choose our own response regardless of our circumstances, and the principle of balance between production and the capacity to produce. And so this really isn't a series about information. It's a series about transformation. And at the gate of that transformation is we're going to see more than once. Again, it opens only from the inside. So before we talk about solutions, we have to be honest about problems. And let's be honest, everybody has those. And we're not talking about the surface problems like the calendar's too full or the team is underperforming or the budget's strained. Those are real and they absolutely need to be addressed with great leadership wisdom and strategy. But again, those are symptoms. What we're talking about is what sits underneath them, the chronic conditions of the internal life, the soul, that no productivity system can really ever fix. So let's talk about the deep problems that we can experience as high-performing leaders. In the work of coaching and developing leaders, that same deep problem surfaces with remarkable consistency. They show up in different industries, again, cross disciplines. They show up in different organizational contexts, both workplace, marketplace, church. They show up in different theological traditions. They appear in leaders who are succeeding by every external measure and in leaders who are visibly struggling. And what they have in common is that they can't be fixed from the outside. And so as far as the problems go, we've kind of arranged those in certain categories. The first is what we might call a success enigma. You've climbed the ladder of professional and ministry success, or you've hit the goals you set. You've built something that genuinely matters, and somewhere along the way you looked up and realized the ladder was leaning against the wrong wall. Your career is thriving. Your organization might be thriving, but you know, you barely know your spouse. Your children are becoming people you don't fully recognize or that you intended to raise. And the things you told yourself you were building toward are now behind you. And the things you were supposed to be building along the way were quietly neglected while no one was watching. So that's the success enigma. The second is what we might call diminishing momentum. Everyone's experienced this. You begin a new discipline. You've got a renewed commitment to prayer, to getting to the gym with a new exercise regimen. You've started a new reading plan. You've started engaging in a set of leadership practices that you genuinely believe in. And behind all of it, there's real energy and genuine intention. But within weeks, sometimes days, the momentum is gone. Not because you were insincere when you started, but because there's a gap. Think about this. There's a gap between the person you aspire to be and the person you currently are. And Charles, aspiration alone can never close that gap. You cannot keep a promise to yourself that you don't have the character yet to sustain. So that's what we call diminishing momentum. The second is the relational gap. Again, this is something you probably experienced, you just didn't realize it. That's where you invest in people, you treat them well by every standard the leadership literature can provide. You're fair, you communicate, you're generous with recognition, and you still sense that if you step back, the work would stop. That the commitment is to the paycheck and the culture, not the mission. And that's something genuine is missing from the relationship between you and the people you lead. And all of the management technique in the world has not been able to produce it. So again, there are relational gaps. A fourth problem that comes to mind is the problem of someone with a very forceful persona. So let me talk to a lot of you high Ds. You're talented enough, you're perceptive enough, you're articulate enough, you're strategically sharp, sharp enough to influence almost any conversation toward the outcome that you want. You can read the room, you can shape the narrative, you can move people to decisions, but you have a quiet, persistent unease that you don't fully understand. There's a haunting question about what people actually think when you're not around. There's a suspicion that your influence is producing compliance rather than commitment. And then I'd say a fourth, or rather a fifth problem is the activity trap. And that's where we're genuinely busy. We're productively busy, not wasting time. We're not disorganized. The calendar is full of things that are missional and things that matter, or at least things that someone has decided that matter. But at the end of the week, the month, the year, the quarter, the pay period, you have a creeping sense that none of it is making a lasting difference. Even when you've reached goals that you set, somehow the motion and the meaning are not the same thing. That you're efficient at tasks whose importance you're just beginning to second guess. Now, these are not problems that yield a new tool or a better framework. They're chronic conditions, and addressing them requires going deeper, I think, than most leadership development is willing to take on.
Man, that's good stuff, Bruce, for sure. What a powerful way to begin. Man, you really painted a picture in that first trap you're talking about of climbing the ladder of success, but then realizing, the ladder is leaning against the wrong wall. We've scaled the ladder, but we've accessed the wrong things. We've accessed the wrong destination. For me personally, because I'm a person that likes to achieve. I like that feeling of climbing the ladder, you know, and results. But when you reach the mountaintop and look and realize, I'm on the wrong mountain. Man, that's a frightening proposition. Great wisdom in laying out all those traps for us. So, if these are the deep problems, then the question just naturally becomes then why? Why do so many talented, committed, well-resourced leaders find themselves living in some version of one or more of these conditions? The answer has everything to do with a shift in how we define success. This is a shift that happened gradually over the last century, and whose consequences, whether knowingly or not, we're still living with. So let's talk about a character ethic versus what would be called a personality ethic. And so for most of Western history, success was understood through what we might call the character ethic. The foundational conviction was straightforward. It sounds like this: enduring results in any domain of life, be they professional, relational, spiritual, they flow from integrating certain principles deeply into who you are. So integrity, humility, patience, faithfulness, justice. These were not just simple techniques to deploy in the right situation. These are qualities of character to be developed over time through discipline and practice, and the kind of repeated choices that that really form a person from the inside out. The character ethic understood that you know, you just don't shortcut the process. You can't produce the fruit of a life well lived without planting the seeds of character that eventually produce it. So now everybody put your overalls on and your work boots, because we're going to talk about a little bit of a farm analogy here, because that farm analogy is exactly right here. On a farm, you can't neglect the soil all season and cram at harvest time. You can't forget to plant in the spring, then go enjoy the summer and then will a harvest into existence in the fall. Natural systems, they don't work that way. And human character, when we rightly understand it, is truly a natural system. So mm-hmm. somewhere in the early 20th century, a shift happened. All of a sudden, success literature moved from character to personality. And from what you fundamentally are to how you are perceived, from the cultivation of integrity to the development of influence techniques, from primary greatness, you know, the deep internal qualities that make a person genuinely trustworthy and effective over time, shifted to secondary greatness, which is the social recognition of apparent excellence. And so the personality ethic is not without utility. Look, we understand this. Communication skills matter. Self-presentation, it matters. Emotional intelligence, it matters. We're not arguing that the exterior of a leadership is irrelevant. What we are arguing is that when the exterior is developed at the expense of the interior, when technique replaces character as the primary currency of effectiveness, then the result is leadership that performs well in the short run, but oftentimes hollows out over time. Emerson captured this really, really quite precisely. He said, what you are shouts so loudly in my ears that I cannot hear what you say. Look, you can manage your image for a season. You can project confidence you don't feel. You demonstrate warmth that you do not carry. Even communicate vision that you do not believe. But over time, who you actually are, it surfaces. And the people that are closest to you, they'll see it first, but eventually everyone begins to see it. So the leader who relies primarily on personality, they're effectively cramming on a farm. They're getting results until they're no longer getting results. And when the harvest doesn't come, the problem is not that the technique failed. The problem is the character was never cultivated. So this inside approach that Bruce talked about, it begins with an honest reckoning with this distinction. Not as a condemnation of the skills and tools you've developed, but really as an orientation of where the foundation actually lives.
Well, Charles, I think you've really shaped this podcast episode in between those two, because so much that you've learned in leadership. I just want to tell our leaders, just if we can be honest with you, you've been taught a lot that does help you in leadership, but it doesn't necessarily work on who you really are, and that in itself can be frustrating. I think Charles and I have both been through that learning curve before, and I think once we understand the difference between character-based and personality-based approaches to effectiveness, we do run into a question that is more difficult than it first appears. That if character is what matters most, why is it so hard to develop? I mean, why do we keep reaching for external solutions to our internal problems? And I think there's a lot of answers in that question. And I think the answers lie in something that operates so deep in our inner life, our psychology, that most of us have never examined it directly. We're talking about some paradigms, those inner mind maps, if you will, that shape everything that we see. Before we have made a single conscious choice, about how to respond to it. So let's talk about some of those maps, if you will, those internal maps that we carry. We often call them paradigms. Remember, a paradigm is just a lens through which you see the world. It's kind of the construct that you have going in. It's not the world itself. It's your interpretation of the world. It's shaped by everything that has formed you. It's your upbringing, your experiences, your trauma, your success, of course, your theology, and even your culture. And the fundamental reality of human perception is that we do not see the world as it is. Remember this, we see the world as we are. So the map analogy makes this concrete. If you're trying to navigate a large city like Chicago, but you've been given a map of Detroit, your attitude and your behavior in the navigation process is essentially irrelevant. You can drive faster. That's a behavior change. You can think more positively about the journey. That's an attitude change. But as long as you're working from the wrong map, you're going to arrive at the wrong destination more efficiently and with greater optimism. The problem is not your effort. The problem is the accuracy of the map. Charles, you remember this. Just a few weeks ago, we were entrusting our destination around the Dallas-Fort Worth area to Apple Maps. Well, guess what? Apple Maps hadn't accounted for a lot of construction that was happening off highways and exits. And it rerouted us about half a dozen times, took us about 6 miles out of our way. Again, the problem wasn't the effort. It wasn't the fuel economy of the car we were driving. It was the accuracy of Apple Maps in the moment. Now, most of us have never seriously examined the maps that we're navigating from. We just go on autopilot. We experience our perceptions of reality as reality itself. It feels objective. It feels accurate. We think it's simply the way things are. The colleague who's difficult, the situation that's impossible, the pattern in your organization that just seems to keep repeating itself, we experience all of these as external facts rather than asking whether the map we're bringing to them might be contributing to what we're seeing. And that matters enormously for leadership development, because the deepest and most limiting paradigms are the ones that we carry about ourselves, about what's possible for us. And three of them, I think, surface most consistently. The first is a genetic determinism. That's the belief that your character, your temperament, your limitations are fundamentally fixed by what you inherited. And so you may have this internal thought, I've always been this way. My family has always been this way. This is just who I am, and this is the way I think. The second is a what we might call a psychic determinism. And that's a belief that your emotional scripting has been laid down by your experiences of pain, trauma, rejection, failure, and that's what controls your responses. The third is what we would call environmental determinism. That's the belief that your circumstances, your organization, your organizational culture, your relationships or history are what determines your outcomes. And that's the problem. The problem always is fundamentally out there. Now, all three of these maps, they produce the same result. A person who experiences themselves as primarily a product of forces outside of their control. Now, who waits for circumstances to change before they change? Who has outsourced the authorship of their own life to everything outside of them? The good news, and this is genuinely good news, is that maps can change. What we're describing as a paradigm shift is not a minor adjustment to a behavior or an attitude. Listen, it's the change of the lens itself. And when the lens changes, then everything that you look through to see what's beyond it, it causes those things to change too. Not because the external world has changed, but because the person interpreting the external world is now fundamentally different. And Charles, I think that's what genuine transformation can look like. It's what the inside-out approach is designed to produce.
And I couldn't agree with you more, Bruce. And that's, you know, we're talking about paradigms and shifting paradigms. The paradigm shift that really matters most is the one that makes every other development possible. It's a shift in how we understand our own freedom. Because as long as we believe that our responses are determined by our circumstances, then we have no foundation for genuine character development. We're simply reactive systems, producing outputs determined by inputs that we do not choose. And so there's another way to understand the human person, and it really changes everything. A guy named Viktor Frankl, he was a Jewish psychiatrist living in Vienna when he was arrested by the Nazis and transported to the concentration camps. And so over the course of his imprisonment, he lost nearly everything: his family, his manuscripts, his freedom, his physical health. He was subjected to brutality that, look, most of us could not even begin to imagine. And by every external measure, his circumstances were utterly determining. But in the midst of those circumstances, what he discovered was something that he would spend the rest of his life articulating. And it's this: that between stimulus and response, there is a gap. And in that gap lives the last and most essential human freedom. It's the freedom to choose how well or how we will respond to what happens to us. And so his captors could control his environment, but they could not control his response to that environment. And in that distinction, he found not just survival, but he found meaning. So if that freedom is available in those circumstances, it's available in yours and in mine as well. This is what we mean by proactivity, not the motivational poster version of the word, right? I think everyone's seen those. But it's precise meaning, the capacity to act from chosen values rather than react from conditioned impulses. The freedom to be, regardless of what's happening around you, the freedom to be the person you have decided to be. So we've got four, let's call them endowments, that make this possible and that distinguish us from purely reactive systems. The first is self-awareness. It's the capacity to stand apart from your own thought processes and be able to examine them. To notice that you're angry rather than simply being angry. To observe that you're operating from a particular paradigm rather than simply living inside it as if it were reality itself. The second is imagination. So this would be the capacity to create in your mind a reality that does not yet exist in your circumstances. To envision the person you want to become before you have become them. To hold a picture of a different future and then move toward it from the inside out. The third is what we'll call conscience. The internal sense of what is right and what's true. The moral compass that exists independent of cultural consensus and social pressure. So leaders who are disconnected from conscience become skillful at rationalizing whatever their circumstances or ambitions call for. Leaders who are deeply connected to conscience carry a kind of integrity that can't be faked and it can't be purchased. And then finally, the fourth is independent will. So this would be the capacity to act from your self-awareness, from your imagination and your conscience, rather than from the external forces pressing on you at any given moment. To love when you don't feel loving, to be patient when everything in you is reaching for a reaction, to serve when recognition is absent. So the language we use every day, it reveals which mode we're operating in. Reactive language says, "He makes me so angry," or, "You know, I have to do this," or, "There's nothing I can do. That's just the way I am. It's just the way God made me." Each of these is a small surrender to the gap. It's a small ceding of authorship to circumstances. Proactive language says, "I choose how I respond to this," or, "I will," or, let's look at our options, or, "You know what, I can be different here." Love itself, in the deepest sense, is not a feeling that happens to us. It's a verb. It's a choice. It's a set of behaviors that we enact regardless of the emotional state we're currently experiencing. So proactive leaders truly understand this. They understand that the quality of their most important relationships depend not on how they feel, but on what they choose. And here's the diagnostic that makes all of this practical. Whenever you catch yourself thinking that the problem is out there, it's in the difficult colleague, it's the impossible situation, it's the organization that needs to change, or the spouse who needs to be different, I want you to notice that thought, because that thought itself is the problem. As long as the problem is out there, then you and I have given the solution to someone else. And you're going to wait indefinitely for a change that only you can make.
Charles, powerful segment there. I just love the four endowments. And, boy, what a powerful way to close it and remind our listeners that, you know, to surrender your ability to change internally, again, you're just surrendering the problems to other people to solve. When you could be taking action yourself. And I want to encourage our listeners, you've got so much progress you could make. It's really, Charles, isn't it just the switch of a mindset to really embrace that? I think there is one more principle that we probably need to establish before we close this episode. Because the inside-out approach is not just about character development in the abstract, it's about the specific relationship between long-term capacity and short-term results. And getting this relationship wrong, I think, is one of the most common and costly mistakes in leadership. And we're talking about your potential. When I think of potential, the old Aesop fable comes to mind, of the goose and the golden egg. Of course, it's one of the oldest stories in Western tradition, and it really does encode one of the most practically important principles in leadership, and that's the balance between production and the capacity to produce. If you remember, the farmer in the story has a goose that lays a golden egg every day, and one day, impatient with the pace of one egg per day, he kills the goose to get all the eggs at once. But the truth is, he gets nothing. He's consumed his capacity to produce in the pursuit of accelerated production. And the application is obvious. Of course, I think all of our listeners probably understand it. It shows up everywhere. A machine run without maintenance to meet a production quota eventually breaks down. And the cost of the breakdown will exceed the short-term gain of the output. So a financial strategy, for example, that invades principle to fund lifestyle eventually exhausts the capacity to generate returns. A body that's driven without rest and recovery will eventually stop performing at the level being demanded of it. But the most important application for leaders is the human one. That's when you use position, authority, and the force of a strong personality to extract results from people. That's when you rely on your ability to control outcomes rather than investing in the development of genuine trust and capability. You're borrowing against your relational and organizational capital. You get the output that you need for today, but you're going to pay for it in the erosion of the relationship and the capability and the commitment that could have produced far more over time. So we call this borrowing strength, and it builds weakness in three distinct directions simultaneously. In fact, it builds weakness in you, because you become dependent on the external force rather than developing the internal capacity to lead without it. It builds weakness in the people you lead, because their growth is stunted by a leadership style that bypasses their agency rather than developing it. And it builds weakness in the relationship itself, because the currency of that relationship becomes compliance rather than trust. Now listen, the alternative, the inside-out alternative, is to invest in the goose, to build the trust, the character, the relational depth, and the genuine capability that produce sustainable results over time, not as a strategy for getting more eggs eventually, but because investing in the goose is simply what integrity looks like in leadership. So remember, effectiveness is not a machine, it's an ecosystem. And ecosystems require tending, not harvesting.
Wow, man, that's, again, that's powerful, Bruce. You're on fire today. You got ladders leaning against the wrong wall. You've got this invest in the goose. I mean, that's one that sticks with me.
You've been the Renaissance man. You've mentioned Viktor Frankl and Emerson today. let me hear what else you got.
Well, I can't get past the goose is loose. That's going to resonate with me for sure. Well, let's try to. Here I've fouled up the episode again with my simpleton little mind here. But let's try to bring this episode to a close. Try to bring something that's both honest and practical. The insider approach. it's not a technique. This is a reorientation. It's a decision to locate the work of change where change actually begins, and that's in the interior of the person rather than in the manipulation of circumstances. So what we're advocating for, this really requires a willingness for us to examine the paradigms that we've been navigating from, to take responsibility for the gaps between the leader you present and the person that you truly are, to invest in the development of character with the same seriousness that you bring to the development of skill. I think that's a really important distinction. We work hard at building skills, and I think what we're saying is bring that same intensity in developing our character. So none of that's comfortable by any means. Frankl's insight about the gap between stimulus and response, it's truly liberating, but it's also clarifying in ways that remove certain excuses we've been relying on. If you have the freedom to choose your response, then you can't fully blame your circumstances for your results. That's a hard thing to sit with, right? But it's also the beginning of genuine transformation. So here's a practical challenge that I'm going to encourage all of us to carry into the next 30 days. Just three things to be intentional about over the next month. First, monitor your language. For the next 24 hours, listen to yourself carefully. Every time you hear reactive language, things like I can't, or I have to, or there's nothing I can do, if only they would change, stop. Stop yourself right there, mid-sentence. As soon as you detect it, stop and name it, right? Then choose a different response. Not because the external situation has changed, but because you're practicing the discipline of authorship. Second is to identify a recurring reactive pattern. In other words, a specific situation or relationship where you consistently respond from impulse rather than choice. So spend time this week imagining a different response, not suppressing the impulse, but developing the capacity to act from your values rather than from your conditioning in that specific context. And then third, focus your energy in your circle of influence for 30 days, not on the things that you can't control, the organization's decisions, your colleagues' behavior, circumstances you didn't choose, but focus on the things that you can control. Make small, specific commitments to yourself and keep them, because the capacity to keep a large promise to others is really it's built by keeping small promises to yourself. So that's a great place to start. Begin there with this. Challenge over the next 30 days.
Charles, those are some really, I think, some pivotal points of reflection for our listeners. There's a question we want to leave you with today, and we mean it as an invitation rather than an accusation. It's simply this: is where in your life are you waiting for something external to change before you're willing to change internally? Because that waiting in the gap that we're talking about, That's what's happening. And the only person that can close the gap is you. So, listen, if this series, and now we're in the first episode today, but both today and in our coming episodes, if it surfaces something in your leadership or your personal formation that you want to explore more deeply, if you want to guide for the interior work that we've been describing, we'd love to talk with you and walk with you through it. So connect with us at charlesrusselltraining.com, charlesrussellministries.com, or coachingcardia.com. We offer life coaching and leadership development for people who are ready to do some of the deeper work. And so next episode, we're going to go further into the architecture of an inside-out life, specifically into what it means to begin with the end in mind. And then to orient every decision and every investment toward a clear picture of what you ultimately want your life to really be about. Remember, you cannot live a life by accident and evaluate it honestly at the end. You have to choose the destination before you begin the journey. And that choosing, that courageous, specific, values-driven choosing is where the inside-out approach becomes a way of life rather than a concept. It's been great to be with you today, and we'll see you next time, next week, on the Five Gifts Podcast. You've been listening to the Five Gifts Podcast. If you would like to take the next step as a spiritual leader, we invite you to visit either of our websites or contact us for leadership coaching. We can help you reach the next level in your own growth and leadership. We provide leadership, spiritual gift, and personality assessments that give you a better grasp of your leadership style. And we also create a customized growth plan that empowers you to reach your full kingdom potential. We can't wait to hear from you.